In the last 4 to 6 weeks, against the backdrop of some very interesting developments in the news, I have spent a fair amount of time interacting with two very different groups of people. The first, friends of mine in the Free State Project, other liberty-minded folks, friends on Facebook, listeners to this show, and the other group of people who would fit into the 99.9% of the population that we will just sum up as everybody else. I've noticed a couple interesting things, and I'll start by saying this. If you are new to this show, new to the ideas of liberty, and you find yourself outraged, frustrated, even shocked by what has happened, what we've heard in the news in the last 4 to 6 weeks, the arrest of the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange on trumped-up sexual assault charges, the possibility of him being extradited to the United States, possibly executed, the new invasive procedures of the TSA, the humiliation that Americans are forced to endure at airports, the emergence of a snitch society being encouraged by the Department of Homeland Security on the telescreens, I'm not making that up, in the checkout lines at Walmart. I admit that it seems like things have gone to a new level here, just in the last month. If you only associate with like-minded people, you might be somewhat surprised to learn that a majority of folks in that 99.9% that I spoke of earlier are either silent or supportive, or completely unaware. But if you're in the other 0.1%, and you find yourself at times overcome by feelings of frustration and anger and fear and shock, I would ask you to pause for a minute. Reflect on your life, from your first memory to your, high school graduation. Try to remember the respect for your intellect that you enjoyed while in church, the privacy and respect that you enjoyed at home and at school, the use of fear, the use of manipulation, the frequency of punishment, the dangling of rewards, the arbitrarily assigned labels of good and bad, of right and wrong, the endless struggle to gain the trust of authorities when it came to your judgment, paralleled by continuous demands from those same authorities for your unquestioning and non-negotiable trust in their judgment. Can you picture it all? Were you expecting some other political and social reality as an adult? This is School News, number 5, Police State Pupils, Acquiescence and Aggression.
A student-operated press headline reads, "Terrified little boy strip-searched by TSA agent." And from the Toronto Star, "Airport pat-down worse than going to a gynecologist." But it can't really be that bad, right? A new ABC News Washington Post poll suggests 64% of Americans support TSA body scanners, and 48% say the more aggressive pat-downs are justified. Even so, Politico's Josh Gerstein asks whether strong reactions to pat-downs represents a tipping point in Americans' willingness to compromise privacy for security. The article quotes a former Bush administration official as saying, "Americans have decided they don't like that part of it, but haven't considered the other side of the equation. I think this is unfortunately a bit of a case of the American public wanting to have their cake and eat it." On CNN, Tony Harris and Kate Baldwin try reasoning through passenger apprehensions.
It's a small number of people who end up being subjected to the more enhanced
surgery. The enhanced pat-down. And a small number of people going through the, revealing body scans.
Because we don't have that many in the country.
We're only in 12% of the airport.
Yeah.
But you can request a private area to have this pat-down happen. But, of course, you're just trying to get to your plane. So you have to balance it yourself as a passenger. Do I go to this room, or do I just put up with it and get on my flight?
Touch my junk, I'm going to have you arrested.
Protesters showed up at airports, but the traveling public seemed unfazed, except for one woman who went to extremes to support the scans.
If they want to try and see what I've got hidden in my bikini, they're welcome to.
And the one American we found at Victoria International felt the fuss was unwarranted.
I'll probably do a scanner.
Why?
You know, I'm happy to be on a plane that I know is not going to blow up.
Katza says it takes 20 seconds to complete the scan, and that timeliness seems to be a draw for some.
Probably scanner. It's more all-inclusive and probably better for the objective they're trying to attain. So,
I would do the scanner as well, just because it's faster. Not that I wouldn't mind a pat down my age. But
if you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around, hey, I'll make a more day. I get one down in a second if you wait. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around, hey, I'll make a more day. I get one down.
Hi, everyone. On today's show, a roundup of interrelated school news items. We will start with a somewhat prophetic article from over 2.5 years ago from Reason.com. The School Crotch Inspector, Fighting the Advil Menace One Strip Search at a Time, by Jacob Sullum, April 2nd, 2008. There are two kinds of people in the world. The kind that think it's perfectly reasonable to strip search a 13-year-old suspected of bringing ibuprofen to school, and the kind who think those people should be kept as far away from children as possible. The first group includes officials at Stafford Middle School in Stafford, Arizona, who in 2003 forced 8th grader Savannah Redding to prove that she was not concealing Advil in her crotch or cleavage. It also includes two judges on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, who last fall ruled that the strip search did not violate Savannah's Fourth Amendment rights. The full court, which recently heard oral arguments in the case, now has an opportunity to overturn that decision and vote against a legal environment in which school children are conditioned to believe that government agents have the authority to subject people to invasive, humiliating searches on the slightest pretext. Stafford Middle School has a zero-tolerance policy that prohibits possession of all drugs, including not just alcohol and illegal intoxicants, but prescription medication and over-the-counter remedies. Quote, except for those for which permission to use in school has been granted. In October 2003, acting on a tip, Vice Principal Carrie Wilson found a few 400-milligram ibuprofen pills, each equivalent to two over-the-counter tablets, and one non-prescription naproxen tablet in the pockets of a student named Marissa, who claimed Savannah was her source. Savannah, an honor student with no history of disciplinary trouble or drug problems, said she didn't know anything about the pills and agreed to a search of her backpack, which turned up nothing incriminating. Wilson nevertheless instructed a female secretary to strip search Savannah under the school nurse's supervision without even bothering to contact the girl's mother. The secretary had Savannah take off all of her clothing except her underwear. Then she told her to pull her bra out to the side and shake it, exposing her breasts, and pull her underwear out at the crotch and shake it, exposing her pelvic area. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between drug warriors and child molesters. I was embarrassed and scared, Savannah said in an affidavit, but I felt I would be in more trouble if I did not do what they asked. I held my head down so they could not see I was about to cry. She called it the most humiliating experience I've ever had. Later, she recalled, the principal, Robert Beeman, said, quote, he did not think the strip search was a big deal because they did not find anything, unquote. The U.S. Supreme Court held that a public school official's search of a student is constitutional if it is, quote, justified at its inception and reasonably related in scope to the circumstances which justified the interference in the first place. The search was neither. When Wilson ordered the search, the only evidence that Savannah had violated school policy was the uncorroborated accusation from Marissa, who was in trouble herself and eager to shift the blame. Even Marissa, who had pills in her pockets, not in her underwear, did not claim that Savannah currently possessed any pills, let alone that she had hidden them under her clothes. Savannah, who was closely supervised after Wilson approached her, did not have an opportunity to stash contraband. As the American Civil Liberties Union puts it, quote, there was no reason to suspect the 13-year-old honor roll student with a clean disciplinary record had adopted drug smuggling practices associated with international narco-trafficking, or to suspect that other middle school students would willingly consume ibuprofen that was stored in another student's crotch, unquote. The invasiveness of the search also has to be weighed against the evil it was aimed at preventing. Remember, the school district's lawyer recently told the ABC News by way of justification, quote, this was prescription-strength ibuprofen, unquote. Years ago, I had this idea, this belief, that sooner or later, a day would come when the actions of the individuals calling themselves the government with respect to power grabs and, for lack of a better phrasing, rights violation, the actions would become so flagrant and so egregious that people would, in mass, stand up and say, all right, enough. Like, seriously, enough. And I don't know what I would expect them to do. I'm certainly not advocating any kind of armed uprising, never have, never will. But at least acknowledgement. Maybe voicing some disapproval. But in the last month, we've seen some of the most amazing steps forward, or marching forward, down this path to totalitarianism, with the TSA, and then the whole Julian Assange flap. But the truth is that a majority of people are totally fine with all of this stuff. And they have this amazing way of being able to just integrate it into their belief system, these little steps, even when the strides get longer, as we've seen in the last month. They can just find a way to make this okay. So I've realized that for a majority of people who are alive right now, who are following politics or watching the news, that mass awakening is not coming. And you know, the truth is that if I was thinking in like 2005 or 2006, man, it just has to get to a point where people, you know, something happens that wakes everybody up. Who was I kidding? And this was 3 years after the invasion of Iraq. 2 years after every reason for that war, pretty much, was exposed as a lie. The time for that mass awakening had come and gone. So there are people who are getting mainstream media attention for their opposition to these latest great leaps forward in the expansion of the state. George Donnelly, Jim Babb, the Don't Touch My Junk guy, mostly ridiculed or attacked by people in the mainstream media, from what I've seen so far. Without a doubt, I applaud their efforts and their courage. The same could be said for Assange and his supporters. But how far up in the tree are we right now? I think we can see what's going on with tremendous clarity. It's frustrating. Scary. Like, really, I am starting to feel a little bit frightened by how people not only just accept this, but then have this whole cachet of rationalizations, like, immediately ready as soon as the next step happens. I mean, they're, like, ready. with statistics and stuff. What percentage of the airports have body scanners? Not that many. What are the odds of getting cancer from these body scanners? Very low. How many people are actually pulled out of line for these random pat-downs or body scans? Hardly anyone. It's like, is there some kind of newsletter that liberty-minded people are not getting? That has all this, that like a press release? I mean, as I've observed all this over the last month or so, I'm starting to understand why libertarians are so into zombie movies. Right? We are just so sympathetic to that lone live person being chased all over the place by zombies. But even within our own discussions, within our own efforts, I feel like people, and again, not a slight against anybody, but I feel like people are devoting too much time and energy to plucking sticks and leaves off the tree. The subtitle of today's show, Police State Pupils, Acquiescence, and Aggression. This is like the 75th installment of this show. If you've been listening all the while, I don't think that there's going to be any surprises about where I'm going to suggest that this deference and obedience to authority comes from. Like, I have nothing new there, but I think in light of these recent developments, there are some things that are worth reiterating. I remember this discussion, I don't want to call it a debate, that I was having with somebody a while back where they called me the A word, anarchist. And I said to them, my response was, well, only a bomb-throwing lunatic would suggest that society does not need to be organized in some manner. But wouldn't it be so much safer? Wouldn't it be so much more prosperous, so much more productive, dare I even say efficient, if it was organized around some kind of universal principle instead of around this idea that is just millennia old, that might makes right, that authority and virtue or authority and knowledge and foresight are somehow synonymous? Wouldn't it be great if we could evolve beyond that? Well, I knew this was the last conversation that I ever needed to have with this person on that subject when they found this assertion to be completely incomprehensible. But isn't that so much less chaotic than what we're looking at with just these two examples from the last month of the TSA and the Assange situation, the WikiLeaks, all of these State Department cables that just got leaked. When we're having naked pictures taken of ourselves, when we're having somebody stick their hands, I haven't been on a plane in a while. I don't know how bad it really is. I hear it's not great. I hear it's kind of demeaning. When we talk about the increased surveillance state, when we talk about all of the prying into personal information that the government can do today and has been able to do for the last decade, we're always reassured that, hey, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to worry about. If you have nothing to hide, you've got nothing to worry about. But when somebody starts a website that takes information, internal government information, and makes it available to the people who friggin' pay for it, the people calling themselves the U.S. State Department, shouldn't they be subject to the same standard? If you're not doing anything wrong, what are you worried about? That's not exactly what happened, is it? They want to kill this guy. They want this guy extradited and executed. Over and over and over again in our adult lives, we are forced to accept this one-way street of right and wrong. Right for me, wrong for you. Because after all, I'm bigger. So, for the last couple months, I've been building up this collection of potential school news items. And just with everything else that we've been doing on the show, I haven't had a chance to get to them. So, today, a little bit of a roundup format. And when you, I don't mean to laugh because this isn't funny, when you look at everything that we're facing today as adults, the economic climate, the political climate, the expansion and encroachment of the state, and we juxtapose that for just a moment with the experiences that most of us have as children in church, at home, certainly in school. The experiences that we were having 15 years ago, 30 years ago, 45 years ago, 100 years ago. I mean, where else would you expect society to be today? 12 years of asking for permission to speak and to go to the bathroom. What did you think? You'd be free? You'd be respected? You'd be honored as an individual? You'd have some kind of expectation of privacy? You weren't trained for any of that stuff. Now, on this show in the past, I think we've been very thorough when it comes to outlining and detailing the reasons why people, as adults, acquiesce. But today, I want to use a montage of recent news items to address the question of why do they aggress? Why do they support the aggression? Why do they sit silently in front of their television and react either in favor or in complete indifference when somebody calls for the assassination of a peaceful whistleblower, exposing the horrors of a system that they are forced to pay for? So let's continue.
Tonight, an Ada mom claims teachers humiliated her son for not finishing his homework.
She says the punishment traumatized him. Eyewitness News 5's Amanda Guerra is live with our big story. Amanda, this mom wants the school to change its policy.
Jessica, Amy Caton's son goes to Willard Grade Center in Ada, and she says during recess, teachers made him stand, face the building, and stare at nothing but the wall in front of him. For students, it's pretty simple. Work hard in the classroom, play even harder at recess. But after one student in Ada didn't turn in a paper, his mom says not only was his recess taken away, but he faced what she calls cruel punishment.
I think it's a horrible policy. I think it's humiliating. I think it's disgusting.
Amy Caton claims teachers forced her 12-year-old son, Jonathan, to stand against the wall with his nose touching it. She took these pictures with her cell phone.
It was extremely traumatic. When he called me, he was crying. He was very upset.
Amy pulled her son out of school for a week. We called Ada Superintendent Pat Harrison. He says students don't have to touch the building with their nose. They just have to face it. He also says, quote, it's a rule that has been in place for a number of years and has never been questioned before. But I realize that doesn't necessarily make it appropriate. That's why we are reviewing it. Amy says her son won't ever have to stand against the wall during recess again, but she wants the same for all students.
I mean, even though it's not an issue for my child any longer, I still don't agree with the policy. I don't think any child should have to do that.
From Times Record News, Wichita Falls, Texas. Moms angry over SWATs. Two students at City View get spanked, by Ann Work. Posted December 11th, 2010. A male administrator at City View Junior Senior High School spanked two 17-year-old female students with a paddle Thursday for going to the bathroom after lunch, an infraction that both of the girls' mothers considered so minor that they've decided to speak out. Despite a no-bathroom break directly after lunch policy, both girls went anyway, and then were called, one after the other, to City View Assistant Principal Daryl Frazier's office and punished with one lick apiece, according to mothers Charlotte Beaver and Barbie Parker. City View Principal Raymond Weathersby said Friday that the girls were punished for disobeying the directive of a teacher, not for simply going to the bathroom. City View schools have practiced a pro-spanking policy for years. The appeal to tradition. According to page 40 of the City View Student Code of Conduct, corporal punishment is permitted, quote, as a corrective action to certain rules and fractions in order to preserve an orderly and effective educational environment. Factors of student size and age and the physical and mental and emotional conditions of the student shall be considered before the administration of any corporal punishment, unquote. According to the policy manual, students must be informed of the reason, and a SWAT may be administered by the teacher, school principal, or assistant principal. The instrument used must be approved by the principal, and a record of SWATs must be maintained. Oh, okay, I'm starting to feel better about this. The specific directive that these girls disobeyed Thursday, according to Weathersby, was the rule he instituted 3 weeks ago that forbade any student from using the bathroom directly after their 30-minute lunch period ends. The school had been having an inordinately large number of tardies to classrooms after lunch, prompting Weathersby to make the new rule, he said. Quote, any kid that needs to go to the bathroom needs to go during their lunch period, Weathersby said. They've got 30 minutes. Can you hear anyone you know? I just want to pause for a second. Can you hear anyone you know defending this right now? I certainly can. However, both mothers said that because their daughters were not late to their classes and because they were observed going to the bathroom by a teacher who did not make any comment to them, they believed the punishment was too harsh. Parker's daughter, who began attending City View Secondary School in the fall, was called to the office first. She had never been disciplined at the school before, and when given the choice between taking licks or spending time in in-school suspension, ISS, she panicked, her mother said. The daughter said, quote, I'll just take the lick, I guess, and later told her mother that she was shocked by the severity of how much it hurt. She told her mother that the SWAT burned for 30 minutes afterwards. And then the mother says, she wanted me to look at her butt when she got home. She asked me, can they do that? She's never been hit like that, not by me or by her dad or by anyone ever, Parker said. Because the Parker family is new to the district, Parker said she did not know of City View's pro-spanking philosophy. She plans to remove her child from City View after Christmas, she said. That's crazy. Is this some Nazi war camp or something? What? Are you kidding me? Going to the bathroom is going to the bathroom, Parker said. After Parker's daughter received her spanking, she went back to class and told Beaver's daughter, I just got a lick for going to the bathroom. You're next. Soon, the phone rang in the classroom with an administrator calling Beaver's daughter to the office. On the way, Beaver's daughter stuffed toilet paper into the seat of her pants to cushion the blow she expected would be coming. Beaver's daughter entered the administrative area saying, go ahead, give me licks. My mom will be up here in a minute. According to Beaver's daughter, Frazier asked, don't you want to know what you're getting licks for? Frazier tells students to put their hands on the wall to steady themselves when he gives them 1 to 3 swats with a wooden paddle, according to Beaver's daughter, 17-year-old. 17-year-old. Only Frazier and Weathersby are authorized to give licks, Weathersby said. An administrator, usually a female, is always present, he said. We give them the choice of ISS or SWATs, and they usually take SWATs, he said. It's nice to have a choice, like body scanners or don't fly. Weathersby said Frazier delivers all of the SWATs and will give him a report at the end of the year about how many SWATs he delivers. However, at this time, Weathersby said he had no idea how many City View students receive SWATs at his school in a week or in a month's time. Quote, I wouldn't even be able to guess. I'm not tracking how many he's giving, he said. City View School Board member Mary Ward said Friday she did not want to comment on what happened Thursday because she did not know the details, but she supports the SWAT policy, she said. Quote, yes, because they need to learn discipline. A lot of them don't have discipline at home. They're going to get out in the real world, and things aren't going to be peaches and cream, Ward said. I totally agree. When reminded that the real world doesn't deliver swats to teenager, Ward emphasized that students are given a choice of what type of punishment they want to receive. Ward would not comment directly when asked if it was appropriate for a male administrator to spank a fully developed young woman on her bottom, even if she had behaved badly. It depends on what the situation is, she said. I don't know what the circumstances are. It's always nice to not know what the circumstances are when you don't want to answer questions that don't even need to be answered. These two girls are not troublemakers or disrespectful, and such punishment seemed unnecessary, said both mothers. The mother goes, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, but it says here about the mother, Mrs. Beaver. In general, she said she supports the school's policy to give swats to children who act out disruptively. If she's throwing chairs or throwing food or pulling the curtains off the damn building, I don't mind them giving swats. But for going to the bathroom, I think you've crossed your boundaries with that, Beaver said. Then goes on to say, Beaver was so upset about the incident that she called Wichita Falls attorney Steve Bjordeman for advice. Bjordeman said that under Texas law, school districts are given wide latitude about how to handle student discipline. Hitting, which should be considered assault if done by one adult to another, okay, I agree, is exempted when administered by a parent providing what they believe to be reasonable discipline. There's a similar exemption for school administrators who are meeting out discipline to a child enrolled in the school. A parent can file a criminal assault complaint, but the justice system will simply recognize the specific exemption and be unable to proceed with a criminal case, he said. If a parent doesn't like such rules, then he is best served by addressing the authority that governs the school board. They have a right to fire that individual or to otherwise mete out punishment to that individual. And this article gets a little bit sloppy here at the end, so I'm just going to skip ahead a little bit more to read one more statement from the lawyer. If a parent doesn't like such rules, then he is best served by addressing the authority that governs the school board. Quote, they have the right to fire that individual or to otherwise mete out punishment to that individual. They can adopt policies that cover these situations and demand that they be adhered to. The problem is, you're complaining ultimately to the authority that has put that person in that place of authority to begin with, Bjordeman said. The only significant remedy is to find a different school for the child, he said. For as many Mrs. Beavers as I can pull into my office and talk about how much they disapprove of this policy, I can bring in just as many parents who would say that that was handled absolutely right, that students need this level of discipline, that how they discipline keeps them on a straight and narrow path, he said. You have just as many parents who will hip-hop hooray it. Hip-hip hooray it. Sorry, I don't know why Naughty by Nature just popped into my mind there. That's the simple reason why the courts have said we're not going to get involved in the day-to-day matters of how schools operate. But Bjordeman stressed that he only had heard Beaver's side of the story and could not make a judgment call on the situation, but that if she was truly upset, she should run for a spot on the school board or support a school board member who would vote for policies that she agreed with. The end. Let's take a little stroll through the comments here. I think I saw one that I liked, or hated, I should say. Reliable writes, sounds like you had two kids that broke the rules and were given options on the punishment. They chose the licks, thus they got what they selected. Maybe they will think next time before they break the rules. Or better yet, if they break the rules and don't like the licks process, they will select the detention instead. And yes, it does burn a bit. Been there, done that. You haven't really had a lick unless you've been down in the boiler room basement at Old High. I'm guessing this is a local person, with Mr. Reed, holding on to that old cafeteria chair waiting for the heat was a lonesome feeling. Seems like I remember some guys wore double underwear. I wasn't so lucky. And as I mentioned, it does make you think before you bend the rules next time. So there you go, a ringing endorsement for what is, in all other cases, sexual assault, because, hey, I'm older, and it was done to me, and it's not because I was abused, it's just because I was tough, and today kids are not tough enough to deal with being abused and humiliated by adults, like we were back in the day. Here's another one. Misplaced Wichitan writes, here's my take on it. School said no restroom breaks 30 minutes after lunch. They have every right to say that. So what does that mean for the students? Go to the restroom during lunch. They broke a rule set by the faculty, and they were given options for punishment. They chose a spanking. Did these two girls believe that they were above the rule set? We can sit here all day and play the what-if game, and there will be several people who are close to the situation that will no doubt fill us in on that thing TRN, that's the name of the paper, left out. But the bottom line is that they broke the rules and they chose their punishment. The school did everything that they were supposed to do. Parents, if you don't want your children getting spankings in school, teach them to follow rules set forth by those who are charged with providing a quality education. Holy shit. Again and again, we will see people siding with the aggressor, jumping to the defense of the aggressor, blaming the victim. Keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. But in the schools, it's not just about quality education and discipline. It's also about safety. Let's move from Texas to Rhode Island.
School bus in Middletown, Rhode Island might never be the same again. A voluntary test probe slated to get underway at the Aquidneck Elementary School tracks not only the bus location, far. The system uses radio frequency ID tags that are attached to a student's book bag. Had the program been operational last year, when 6-year-old Eli Weininger fell asleep returning from kindergarten, his parents could have easily discovered he missed his stop.
I fully approve of this. Younger students are, likely to do unexpected things.
Although it seems most parents approve of the high-tech bus monitoring program, some critics say instead of keeping kids safe, it could have the opposite impact and place them in harm's way.
Any individual can purchase an RFID reader over the Internet and themselves be able to track the school children just as the school itself is tracking it. And it's also creating a database that hackers can hack into.
School district facilities manager Edward Collins, who oversees the buses and whose brother owns the company supplying the equipment for the free test program, says the RFID tags are only encoded with a number. He says it's virtually impossible to hack into the system and come up with a child's name, adding benefits outweigh the risk.
If something happens to the bus, an accident or something, we'll have the data right there, so we can actually contact those parents.
Keeping track of kids with RFID technology could become more widespread. School officials in Middletown believe the idea of an electronic Big Brother isn't a bad idea, especially for 6-year-olds. In Middletown, Rhode Island, David Lee Miller.
Well, okay, if it's just for 6-year-olds, and only to ensure their safety, fine. I mean, after all, who could argue against something aimed at keeping 6-year-olds safe? Do you want 6-year-olds to die? From Rhode Island, we head west to New Mexico.
A concerned family contacted 11 News about a new policy at an area high school. The school says it is just trying to keep kids safe, but some parents call it spying. 11 News reporter Tiffany Craig shows us how it works.
Santa Fe High School feels a bit like, well, prison for 18-year-old Patrick Mann.
Normally the only people you would track would be, per se, prisoners or somebody that's done something very wrong.
You see, Patrick and his classmates have to wear an ID badge with a tracking device inside. He admits getting busted a few days ago.
At that Shell station, they can still see exactly where I am. And I know that because I left the other day and the school cops came up there and said, hey, you need to get back to the school. We tracked you over here.
Santa Fe FAISD got the idea from schools in spring. Spokesperson Patty Hansard says the bottom line is safety and security.
I really don't understand the concern piece there, because basically that is our responsibility, is to make sure that we have a safe and secure environment.
If students forget their badges, a temporary ID is $1 a day. Replacement cards are $15, and the money goes back into the program. One parent told us off camera she doesn't like these badges because it gives her son absolutely no privacy. He is watched every second of the day he's on campus.
Should I keep going? How many more stories like this can you take? I'm starting to worry that I might be torturing some people in the audience with this stuff. Next, I could tell you the story about how every kid in a ninth grade class was enrolled automatically into JROTC. We could do students say school's use of mace creates a police state in Birmingham. I have dozens of these. Or how about this one? Michigan high school students terrorized in police state security drill. With the school shootings in various communities around the nation on the minds of many, police in the western Michigan community of Wyoming entered two classrooms at Lee Middle and High School last Thursday and announced there was a threat to the school. The students, according to the Grand Rapids Press newspaper, were unaware police were conducting a drill, as they were taken from the classroom into the halls and then patted down by officers. The students were also asked what they had in their pockets, according to the newspaper. A little bit forward in the article, the principal of Lee Middle and High School's David Britton said students weren't told ahead of time in order to make the drill seem as realistic as possible. Even teachers were only informed moments before it took place. According to Britton, who said that things went as planned, quote, "I think this is the best way to do it. We're not looking to scare anyone, but we want a sense of urgency." You get the idea. And then there was this. Somebody posted this video on the School Sucks Facebook page a while back. I bookmarked it.
Stripped down to the underwear, locked up in a dark room, and we're not talking about a jail inmate. This is what a mom says happened to her 9-year-old at school. Now look at this room. Looks like a prison cell, solitary confinement. The cement floor, cinder block walls, the door without a knob. The only window covered with a cloth. It's the seclusion room at Joseph Brown Elementary School, Columbia, Tennessee. Now, mom says her special needs son was ordered to stand basically in his underwear on a black X on the floor. That's the way you're going to discipline this little guy? He's 9? Call in 1-877-TELL-HLN's the number. Joining me now to talk about it, little guy's mom, Michelle Parks, also with us, her attorney, Kevin Latta. All right, Michelle, take us back. Give us the specifics of what happened that day.
I was called to the school to come pick up my son that was having a disruptive day in the classroom, and didn't want to do any work, didn't want to listen and follow any rules that the teacher had that day. Suspended him for 2 days out of school.
I hate to make this worse.
To find my son locked.
Has mom been led to believe
in his underwear
that this is the result of a problem?
Yeah, he was upset.
With her son.
My son suffers from ODD, so it's an opposite defiant disorder, so he stays angry, which we're working with him to correct this, and I thought the school was there to help.
At this point, I'm really starting to feel like I might be overdoing this a little bit. Like I said, there's dozens more of these, but how much can you take? I only included that last one because I found something interesting in the comments underneath the video on YouTube. These things, as disturbing as they are, quite common. One person writes, because the teacher was attacked and assaulted by a 9-year-old, the kid should be in a room, padded room, while waiting for the cops to take the kid away. Mom should also be charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor, because she did not teach the kid how to behave. Just because some head doc found some drug that helps kid behave does not excuse his actions. The school should have never stripped the kid except to take his belt and shoelaces so he could not kill himself. One thing that I've noticed in my life in many of my interactions. And, of course, what I've seen in the mainstream media and in comments after articles and videos is so many people just compulsively jump to the defense of aggressors. Now, obviously, the whole first part of this, the acquiescence, the obedience, we understand all that. Like I said, we've dealt with all of that. Where does this aggression come from? Well, over the last 2 months, I've really struggled with an episode of the show that I've been working on in that little series called Children of the State, about my own experience working in a residential school. In that time, I learned two very important lessons about children who are abused or mistreated. The first is they often develop their own violent ideations or become violent, physically violent themselves. I worked with several children who at a very young age had been sexually abused, only later to become sexual abusers themselves. The psychologist who worked with me in this program told me that this was like clockwork. These kids were just ticking time bombs, waiting to sexually assault somebody else, to replicate their abuse on their own victim. Another thing that was very common, these abused and neglected and mistreated children often internalized the experience as something that resulted from a defect in them. Their abuse, whatever pains or horrors, humiliations, violence they had lived through, was only the result of something that they had done wrong. Now, I think the second part, which I'll take first, is kind of easy to understand. If you're trapped living with a violent, psychotic parent, there's no escape, whether it's your real home or a foster home. Boy, that's a really difficult thing to have to face. It's better to not admit that. It's better to... Oh, gosh, just the terror of saying, I am in this horrible, abusive, dangerous, destructive situation that I cannot escape from. I am being held captive by a psychopath. Boy, that's a revelation that requires action, and an action that requires courage. If you think about the persistence of abuse and humiliation, and the complete absence of respect throughout an entire childhood, what kind of courage do you think kids like that can muster? So it was easier just to say, no, it's me. Or maybe not even consciously, but just to get the idea that it's not dad, it's not uncle, it's not foster parent, it's me. Because then, that young person does not have to face the reality of the trap that they are in. Because that's too horrifying. The first part is also relevant to today's topic. After a lifetime of abuse, of mistreatment, after a decade of it, do you think there's some kind of lure? Do you think there's some kind of attraction to an opportunity, a possibility of finally being on the same side, the same team, in the same corner as the aggressor? Because in addition to all of the humiliation and mistreatment that we suffer in school, we're also learning that we get to be a part of something as adults. Being a victim is for pussies. Right? Being the aggressor Boy, that's exciting. If you were bullied in middle school, do you want to be cool in high school? You want to be the bully in high school. Because being bullied sucks. Being the bully looks fun. During childhood and throughout school, we have all this time to get used to concepts like might makes right, my way or the highway, punishment, humiliation, discipline. For your own good, violence leads to better behavior. Well, hell, as adults, since we're already used to all of this stuff, we might as well try to get ourselves on the non-victim side of it. Do you see the attraction to aggression? To a police state? To the boot on the throat of a Mexican? To the assassination of Julian Assange and Bradley Manning? To war? The murder of Iraqis? To so-called law and order? To the imprisonment of nonviolent people by the millions? The treatment that every child, just about every child, endures now and as far back as you want to take that. The disrespect, aggression, humiliation, well, that turns into these violent ideations, sympathy for the aggressor, a lack of self-trust, of self-efficacy, and that all grows up into the state. So to get back to where we started today, there's a lot of controversy right now related to air travel. And I certainly admire the courage of people like George Donnelly and Jim Babb, the We Won't Fly folks, my friends here in Manchester who went down to the airport the day before Thanksgiving to raise awareness about the new TSA procedures. But let's not kid ourselves into thinking that that is going to roll anything back. We have to stop trying to cut these things off at the pass. I always use this metaphor, like trimming the leaves and the branches in a big evil tree. But in keeping with the theme of today's show, let's use this whole air travel controversy. People protesting the TSA know where they need to go. They need to go where the whole process starts, in the airport where these screenings are taking place. That's where you do your chants. That's where you bring your signs. They know that it doesn't make any sense to stand at the end of the runway and try to snag 747s out of the air with a butterfly net. Because that's not productive, and it's potentially self-destructive. So I say there's a valuable lesson there for us. If you devote a fair amount of time to sending people emails about the Walmart Snitch Society, or the TSA procedures, or the Assange situation, or you make Facebook posts, or you write articles, or at every single step you keep dealing with that step, I plead with you to redirect more of your energy and attention into what happens during that time in our lives between our first memory and our high school graduation. Because it's what happens then and there that makes the rest of this shit possible. I think we were just talking about this in the last show. Medicating symptoms. Focusing on symptoms. But that's what bureaucrats do. So, you know, fight against the income tax if you like. If that's your fight, fight it. I've been down that road myself. It's not particularly productive or rewarding. People have argued with me in the past when I put forward the idea that education should be our focus, that what goes on during childhood should be our primary focus. People have said to me, the income tax, that's what makes all of this possible. If the government didn't have the power to tax, they couldn't do any of this stuff. It's not the power to tax. It means nothing. Imagine them running around trying to just collect all of this money. Once people were unhappy, that would stop. They wouldn't have the resources to even deal with a tenth of the people. No, see, it's the power to withhold taxes. How was that sold to the American people? Well, using a technique that is eerily familiar today. You scare them half to death, and then you talk to them like children. But first, you need a system that keeps them thinking and acting like children. Acquiescence, aggression, acquiescence, aggression. It went a little something like this. And I promise, this is not some clever thing that I made up. This is real. It's from 1943.
Payday. 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 Yes, payday. Millions of dollars pouring into the hands of the American worker. Now in the mind of the average worker live two separate personalities. One, the thrifty.
Wait a bit, laddie. You're going to save a bit of that, aren't you?
Sure.
Oftentimes, idle money burns a hole in your pocket, which brings out the other personality. The spendthrift.
Hey, big shot. Come on with me. I'll show you how to spend your dough. I got a couple of good dates.
But, laddie, I've got some better dates.
Important ones, too. When every American should pay his or her income tax gladly and proudly. This year, thanks to Hitler and Hirohito, taxes are higher than ever before. Will you have enough money on hand to meet your payments when they fall due?
We'll take care of that later. Forget it, forget it.
But you don't want to forget our fighting men, do you?
Yeah, sure.
Then you'll have to start saving right away to meet your tax payments.
Listen, Joe. Spend it. It's your dough. Yeah, it's my dough.
Aye, laddie. It's your dough. But it's your war, too. You must save for victory.
What's money for? Spend it. Shoot the works.
Nay, nay, you must save it. Spend. Save.
Spend.
Well, now what are you going to do? Spend for the Axis? Or save for taxes? Just remember, every dollar you spend for something you don't need is a dollar spent to help the Axis. That's right. And every dollar you sock away for taxes is another dollar to sock the Axis. For it is your taxes, my taxes, our taxes that run the factories. Factories making guns, machine guns, anti-tank guns, long-range guns, 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 all kinds of guns. To blast the aggressors from the seas. Axes for American factories, working full blast, making planes. Bombers, dive bombers, flying fortresses, interceptors, stalk the birds of prey that fly by night.
answers to bury the axis. Axis to sink the axis. Taxes to keep them playing. Taxes to keep them rolling. Taxes to keep them coming. Taxes to beat to earth the evil destroyer of freedom and peace. This is our fight. The fight for freedom. Freedom of speech. Of worship. Freedom from want and fear. Taxes will keep democracy on the march.
So is it any wonder why Joseph Goebbels repeatedly stated that he had this respect and admiration for the Roosevelt administration's management of public opinion? And while we're on the subject, I'm reminded of a quote. I think it was Winston Churchill. Yes, it was definitely Winston Churchill. I don't know the original source. The first time I saw it was in this Australian newspaper from the early 1950s in an article about the potential of re-emerging problems in Germany. And it took this quote from Roosevelt. It was probably, well, it was obviously older, but probably from during the war, where he said, "The Germans are either at your throat or at your feet." And when you consider that mindset, violence and obedience, and nothing in between, it shows you how those atrocities, those crimes, those horrors were made possible. Throughout that entire video that I just played, we hear two suggestions repeated over and over again. Obey, attack. Obey, attack. So, in closing for today, if you find yourself angry, concerned, shocked by some of the current events that we've covered in the show today, I sincerely hope that you will start to channel more of your efforts and attention towards striking at the root of this acquiescence and aggression, that together serve as a perpetual launching pad and safety net for so much of the crime and violence and predation that we see in the world today. Thank you for listening, and take care.
The very latest on that breaking news story for you this hour here on BBC World News. Julian Assange, the 39-year-old founder of the WikiLeaks website, is right now in police custody. The WikiLeaks website, of course, such a problem for international diplomacy and not least, most recently, the American government.
This could set off a world war.
The other thing is, who gets hurt from this? The American people. So the way to deal with this is pretty simple. We got special ops forces. I mean, a dead man can't leak stuff. This guy's a traitor, a treasonous, and he has broken every law of the United States. The guy ought to be, and I'm not for the death penalty, so if I'm not for the death penalty, I only want to do it, illegally shoot the son of a...
Well, what about it?
I'm along with Buck. When he comes out and says that he's holding everyone hostage, this guy's got to go.
Humiliation. 71-year-old Robert Perry was also taken to a room like this by a TSA agent when his artificial knee set off the metal detector.
He yelled at me, "No, get the belt off. I told you to get the belt off." So I took the belt off. He ran his hands down over and pulled the pants down and went down around my ankles.
At that point, Perry was standing in his underwear in public view. He asked to see a supervisor. That made things worse.
She was yelling, "I have power. I have power. I have power."
The power to stop him from flying to Florida with his wife that day to celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary.
Protesting, still protesting the new TSA measures. They're calling today National Opt-Out Day, urging flyers to submit to time-consuming pat-downs instead of passing through the body scanners, which could cripple air traffic. Now, this, I think, to me, and maybe this is a little far-fetched, but to me, that's like an act of terrorism.
jobs in the KGB. So, no funny business. Are you already on?
Showing up for your next flight at the airport and being handed a device, a little bracelet, that would serve as your boarding pass. It would track your lost luggage. And it would also shock you with the same power as a taser if you get out of line. Well, a top official with the Department of Homeland Security has expressed interest in these so-called safety bracelets. So is this really the future of air travel?